What is up, Pitcherless family? Welcome to another episode of Hacks and Jacks. I'm your host, Brett Ford, as always, here with senior analyst Scott Chu. Scott, a little bit early, but happy Father's Day weekend coming up. A lot of fun baseball, hopefully, and it's somebody's birthday, I heard.
This guy, I get Father's Day. You know those kids that have a birthday in like mid-December, so their birthday and Christmas get slammed together? That's me and Father's Day, which are the only 2 days that anyone really does anything for me. And now they're all just very conveniently crammed together for my family members, which, you know, what are you going to do?
That's beautiful. You get double the cards, or just, you know,
do your family members? I get one thing.
It's like Father's Day and someone writes, and birthday.
Also heard it was your birthday. And then they, yeah.
I love that. Well, happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there.
We got so many kids between me, you, our podcast manager. That's literally seven children.
Yeah, that's good times. Good times. So happy Father's Day to all the dads out there. We're going to talk some hitters on pitcher list here. We've got a lot to get through. So let's jump right into episode 153. News and notes from the week. A lot of guys head to the IL this week. I'll rattle off the names, and Scott, you can touch on the ones that really matter. Adolis Garcia, Philadelphia outfielder, goes to the 60-day IL. Brent Rooker from the Athletics goes to the IL. New York Yankees outfielder Trent Grisham. Cleveland infielder Jose Ramirez. Kansas City Royals infielder Vinny Pasquantino. And then at 6 o'clock on Thursday evening, about just a couple hours before we started recording, Los Angeles Angels outfielder Mike Trout heads to the IL. Along with Ramirez, the Guardians also sent Angel Martinez and Chase Delauder to the IL. They were so hurt that they had Reese Hoskins playing left field the other night, which I thought was kind of hilarious. Talk to me about those injuries and which ones really matter in fantasy.
Yeah, it's so many. So let's start with the easy ones. Adolis Garcia was like maybe on someone's radar if you were in an AL only. Doesn't really do a lot for me. Reese Hoskins getting more playing time doesn't really mean anything for me, right? I'm not really that interested. It's a bummer to see J-Ram and Delauder go to the IL. Delauder going to the IL is not a good thing. But for those of you wondering if you need to cut him, now you can put him on the IL. So hopefully, you know, that it's not a terribly long time, although it might be. I do wrap up a lot of these injuries in the article for any guy that I'm considering rostering. J-Ram, I think he'll be back by the end of July, early August is kind of where that time frame is. That one's not so bad. Delauder, that's a tough one. So Delauder broke his rib. And I know I'm not a doctor, so I don't know why I talk so much about this health stuff. But basically, it's one thing if you break your arm. You break your arm, you stick it in a cast. You break your foot, you stick it in a cast. You can't do that with your ribs because they need to expand so you can breathe, right? You can't immobilize ribs for healing. So broken ribs take a lot longer to heal than you'd think. And guys often have to manage that injury for a long time, because they have pain when they breathe, right? Because every time they take a breath out, they're moving that bone. Like the muscle around it is just expanding it out. So that one could be tough. I'm not expecting him back until August. There's a couple guys like, you know, since I last did the list that have gone on the IL, most of the injuries we've had lately are pretty minor, which is a plus. But yeah, that one was a big concern. Mike Trout with a hamstring. That's a couple of weeks. Hopefully we're kind of in this space right now as well, where if guys are going to be out for 3 weeks or more, which is like most guys on the IL, right? Cause the IL is just not that long, you know, it's not that much shorter than 3 weeks. They might just hold them out through the All-Star break, right? Because you're kind of you're coming right up on that timeline. So it's going to sound so far away when we say he might be out till the break, but that's because if he's going to come back like the week before the All-Star break, they might not bring him back and just say, hey, why don't you hang out for a little bit, rest. Let's get you back going when we start up, just to get that extra rest. So that's going to be the other thing we kind of manage. It's kind of like that time during the last couple of weeks of spring training where they're like, yeah, they might just not have him in to start the season. So they're not like rushing it or anything. That's kind of where we are right now.
Well, we'll get to the other half of the news, which is mostly good stuff. Guys coming back from the IL, guys being called up to the majors. We finally have elite catchers back in the game. Drake Baldwin and Cal Raleigh each return from the IL. A slightly less elite catcher, Alejandro Kirk, also back for the Blue Jays. Tommy Edman is back healthy for the Dodgers. And Lourdes Gurriel is back healthy to the Diamondbacks, although that one came at the price of Ryan Waldschmidt being sent back to AAA. So you got those 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 guys back from the IL. You're making room on your roster for most of those names, right, Scott?
Yeah, I mean, obviously Drake Baldwin, obviously Cal Raleigh. I know Cal Raleigh's had a tough start to the season. He did hit 5 home runs in 5 games in AAA, which, again, I take major, like longtime major league pros' success in the minor leagues to mean very little, but better than him not hitting any home runs for 5 games, right? So hopefully he can get going. That team has just had kind of some ups and downs with injuries, you know, because they just lost to Rosarena as well. So we'll see how that works out. The one that's kind of tough, and if you have to bring him back, is going to be Alejandro Kirk, because you guys, catcher's just really deep. Like, really deep. It has been all season. There are just guys that you can go get, right? Like, guys that didn't get drafted. Just like the number of guys who didn't get drafted in a single catcher league right now as at catcher that are probably playing catcher. It's going to be like Carter Jensen, Dylan Dingler, Liam Hicks, like all those dudes have like kind of glutted up catcher. So there's a non-zero chance that you just kind of don't need them right now. The biggest thing with Alejandro Kirk coming in is he has played the majority of the time since he's been back. And that means if you've been streaming Brandon Valenzuela, he's got to go, right? You got to go find a full-time catcher because there's too many good catchers. You can't just kind of hold on to a part-time one. So that's the one guy, you know, that move kind of does something that, you know, I know that I was relying on Brandon Valenzuela, and in a 2 catcher league, you still can as that second catcher. It's just like less helpful, but in a single catcher league, you can't really be holding Brandon Valenzuela. You'll have to go and try to find someone else. And there's a couple streamers out there, like even the guys that have, you know, aren't brand new, like Joe Mack is hitting for the Marlins. He doesn't play a ton, but he, you know, he's probably going to play more in Valenzuela, you know, probably 2 extra starts a week. So, you know, there's options out there to stream, just because, especially in a 12 team league, there's more than 12 good catchers. So someone's probably out there, because not many teams at all are going to hold on to 2. And you should.
You talk about the depth of the catcher position. I'm in a position where I have to keep 2 catchers in my 1 catcher league, because I have Drake Baldwin, who just came off the IL, and I picked up Dylan Dingler. Dylan Dingler's been a top 50 hitter. I don't know that I can drop him right now. I have guys in my utility spot that are worse than Dingler that I can let go of to bring back Baldwin.
And that's the key, right? So Dingler does 2 things. Number one, he hits as well as a regular hitter, right? Like, so especially if you're looking at player raters or ranks, catchers get boosted a ton. It's really hard right now to kind of readjust rankings for catchers, right? Especially because some of them have been just so good. Like they've been as good as the regular top elite hitters. So like, it's all kind of wonky right now, but with Dylan Dingler, he does play every day and he's as good as those other hitters, right? Like, not just in terms of like fantasy value return. Dude's got 51 RBI, right? 16 home runs, hitting 255. So if you're going to keep a second catcher, it's really got to be one of these guys that plays every day and who is as good as the other guy you would cut just at hitting. And you might be like, yeah, well, I'm not going to play him at catcher very often. Who cares? Utility, I get it. If you have like a really short, like you can't afford to have any bench hitters, and maybe that's a little bit of pressure, but like, you know, it's okay. Like, you want the best possible hitter in the lineup at all times, right? And if, you know, and you don't want that person who is dealing with, you know, they were streaming Brandon Valenzuela, he's gone. You don't want just to hand that guy Dylan Dingler. I know trading for catchers is hard. It's nigh impossible, because very few managers really need one at this stage. And even when you do, it's kind of like trading kickers, you know, like even if you have the very best one, nobody cares, right? It's not quite the same, because like if you have Ben Rice or Drake Baldwin, I'm sure someone would care, but you don't get the value return that you'd really expect from good catchers, in part because the market's kind of saturated right now.
Two more quick notes from this week. Two NL Central prospects make the major leagues. Not sure if either one matters in your standard 12-teamer. Cardinals call up third baseman Blaze Jordan, and then the Brewers called up shortstop Cooper Pratt. In a corresponding move, they DFA'd Luis Renjifo. So Renjifo is a free agent, and Pratt and Jordan are both in the majors.
Yeah, so Jordan's going to be the one who's got a bit of buzz right now. He puts a ton of baseballs in play. So, you know, that's something to... That's something that's interesting. Like, he's not like this prototypical slugger or anything. It's going to be a lot of balls in play. And I'm not sure it's going to work out quite so great in the majors. Obviously, he's off to a really, really hot start. The big thing with him is ground balls. So he hit a ton of ground balls in the minors, line drives and ground balls. Like, he had a 29% ground ball rate or line drive rate. Which is going to probably turn into more ground balls than anything else based on his minor league track record when he was down there. He's already hitting 68% ground balls in the very, very small sample he has now. I mean, it's hard to put up great stats with ground balls, even when you hit them hard, right? And he is. He's hitting the ball very hard. But you'll notice his expected stats stink because they're on the ground, right? And there's just not, like, it's really hard to hit a ground ball double. You know, that's really hard to do. So I think that there's, you know, some streamer appeal just to kind of see what sticks if you need a third baseman specifically. But I can't, you know, again, I can't get like super, super duper excited about it because there's just all those ground balls are just going to make it really hard for him to be successful over a long period of time.
We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about Scott's top 150 hitters list after this. Welcome back to Hacks and Jacks. I'm your host, Brett Ford, here with Scott Chu talking hitters on Pitcher List. Scott, you have a top 150 hitters list that you put out every week, this week published on Thursday. Let's jump right into the guys who are rising up your list, and we'll start right in the top five, where Nick Kurtz, after a very slow start to the season, has risen all the way into the top five hitters in the major leagues, or at least in your ranks. Talk to me about, you know, this lefty slugger first baseman and what you like about it.
Yeah. So obviously he's ripping the cover off the ball right now. A lot of guys in Oakland have put up really great numbers over the last nine games or so. I'll get into that in just a second. Kurtz, actually, first of all, in a 12 team standard league based on the Fangraphs player rater, at least he is a top five hitter. Even though he got off to a little bit of a slow start, and I've talked about how he can be very streaky. Right. So that's really driven from his limited contact ability, right? He makes awesome decisions at the plate and he hits the ball super duper hard, but he also sometimes just doesn't hit what he swings at, even though he swings at the right thing, right? He's one of these players where normally I'm very concerned with a guy with a zone contact rate below 80%. Nick Kurtz is one of those guys, but there's so much power and he makes such good decisions that it doesn't matter. This is a rarity. Right. So like Aaron Judge is one of these guys that can do this, who can support these zone contact rates kind of at 80 or below. And it works because he makes such good decisions and hits the ball so hard. That's Kurtz as well. I think that bit's legit. I think he's going to really, I think he's, you know, he's well on his way to 40 home runs with like a 290 average. Again, the one thing you need to be prepared for with Kurtz is there are ups and downs relative to how good he is. Right. He'll always be good, but there'll be times where like, whoa, what's up? He's kind of down a little bit. And guess what? I'm not comparing Nick Kurtz to Judge because they're very different guys in a lot of ways, but that is something that happens to Aaron Judge every single season, right? He has a bad month and everyone says, what's up with Judge? And the answer is nothing. This is just the nature of guys with limited contact, but amazing power and decision-making. They'll just be a little bit off in how that swing is like timing up and how that swing is, you know, sort of directed at the ball. They already like aren't, you know, they're kind of below average at it. And so when they're off just a little bit, it kind of overwhelms this great decision-making and power. But once they kind of make that adjustment, boom, they're back. They're firing on all cylinders and they're just pumping the ball out of the yard. So, you know, don't overreact to the ups and downs in Nick Kurtz. Just leave him in and enjoy the ride because it's going to be a ton of stats. Now, I did say I'd mention about the rest of Oakland. So there's a couple guys in Oakland who really also had great stats, and I don't believe in it all, right? So the biggest one is a guy who I think a lot of people would have expected to change in my rankings, and he kind of just stayed in the same spot. That's Zach Eloff. And I was talking to you before the show, Brett, and if you do follow me on Twitter at If The Chew Fits, you would have seen me post this there. Zach Eloff in this 9-game homestand had an actual WOBA, which is like probably one of the best stats of just saying like, how good did he hit, right? It likes walks a little too much for my liking, but generally speaking, it's a really good valuation of how good he's hitting. That 9-game homestand, remember, 6 games in the dry, most hitter-friendly ballpark in the most hitter-friendly league in baseball, plus 3 more games in Sacramento after that, and also getting a fair share of like Colorado's pitching. Zach Eloff's WOBA was 535. For context, this season, Yordan Alvarez does not have a 500 WOBA, right? Nobody can do that for a season. And I'm not saying Zach Eloff would ever do that for a season. What I am saying is that while his actual WOBA is 535, his expected WOBA is 282, right? Basically double. His expected slugging during this homestand was 396. His actual slugging on this homestand was 865. All right. This dude is doubling his expected. You know, I've seen gaps. I've seen big gaps in small samples. I've never seen a dude double his expected slugging unless his expected slugging was like 150, right? This is one of the most unbelievable overperformances on StatCast. And, you know, there's some of it is going to be like, well, he's kind of fast and maybe he pulled the ball. Cool. Ain't no way in heck that continues. Now, I continue to rank Zach Eloff. Zach Eloff did not really fall in my rankings, right? I'm not a maniac, right? He did have an amazing week. He does steal bases. There's some things he can do. I still think he's a very limited hitter and he's going to be closer to the back of my roster than the middle or front. And you know, he's not the only Oakland hitter that's going through this. Basically every Oakland hitter except for Carlos Cortez was an above average hitter for last week. Jeff McNeil was good. Alika Williams was good, right? Alika Williams couldn't stay as an infielder for the Pirates, who did not have any infielders, right? They really basically got rid of him before they went and got Brandon Lowe, before they did all this other stuff. Everybody hit. If you see an Oakland at the top of your, you know, last 15 days rankings, don't overreact. I believe in Kurtz. Kurtz actually hit just about what he was supposed to, right? Because like when he doesn't get cheap home runs, right? He hits the ball really far. But a lot of guys got a lot of very cheap hits from the Athletics. So, you know, lots of caution there on what you kind of should be buying into. Right. So like Kurtz and Langoliers, that's fine. Tyler Soderstrom was a guy who had a really, really hot week. And I just couldn't really move him in the rankings because, again, he was another guy who really overperformed, not to the extent of Eloff. Right. His overperformance was more was about 100 points in WOBA, which is a lot, but like a normal amount of a lot. Like, OK, that's going to regress a little bit. But, you know, his ex WOBA was 323. That's not terrible. Right. He's still got a friendly home ballpark. The offense is hot, whatever. And the plate discipline for Tyler Soderstrom was really improved, but it's worth noting that the stats for those guys for the Athletics are going to be kind of screwy for the, you know, if you're using that last 15 days, it's going to be about another week before that stuff falls off. And it's okay if you count their Sacramento stuff, but anything that's still involving those Vegas numbers is just really hard to take at face value, or in Giloff's case, even like half a face value.
We'll move on out of Las Vegas, Sacramento, wherever the heck the Athletics are playing these days. And we'll move to the AL Central, where the cover boy for the hitter list this week, Miguel Vargas, we can't stop talking about him because he doesn't stop hitting. He has risen in the list again. He's now a top 20 hitter in Scott's top 150 hitters list. This is what people who, you know, had him as he was getting blocked and blocked and blocked by the Dodgers organization coming up. This is what we dreamed of back in the day. So dynasty managers who have Vargas congratulations. It's finally coming to fruition. The opportunity is there and the production is there. It's been amazing to watch the meteoric rise of Miguel Vargas.
Yeah, and the power is there. That's what's different. So he's already matched his home run total from last season. So I post the rolling process plus chart, which you have access to if you're a PL pro. The big difference here is, number one, he's had multiple times this season where he's done all three things good. And process plus is made of three things, and very few guys do all three things good for very long at all. Miguel Vargas has done all three of them very well. There are times where Miguel Vargas's contact has dipped below average, which is fine because the decision-making is fantastic. The power is plus in a way that it's never been before. And actually recently the contact has come back up. Now, in your fantasy leagues, you might notice that over the last 7 and 15 days, Miguel Vargas stats aren't amazing, right? That's not his fault though. He's hitting the crap out of the ball. His ratios are fantastic. It's just that the White Sox aren't scoring runs around him. If there are people in your league that are susceptible to this kind of like, well, I guess the party's over, this kind of crap, you go get him right now. I think by next draft season, there is a non-zero percent chance. I'm talking like 25%, maybe even higher, that Miguel Vargas, we're talking about, is a top 15 batter going into next season, right? I mean, this dude has really exploded. If he keeps his power up, I mean, it's just, and he's running, right? It looks like this season, he could very well hit 30 to 35 home runs with 15 to 20 steals and a batting average that I think can be a lot higher than it was. He started out the season really slow in that department, but I think he can hit 260 or better the rest of the way. Right? I mean, this is a guy who is showing a lot of really plus skills for an extended period of time, right? At least two of the skills have been like plus plus since really like mid-April. Right? Because he starts the season with very little power. And you kind of see that for the first like 3 weeks. And then since then, boom, the guy is just absolutely raking. I very much believe it. I think some of the counting stats will come back when Munetaka Murakami is finally able to come back. Because just the rest of the lineup's not very good. But if they can start hitting just a little bit more around him, you'll see some of those counting stats start to come back. He'll get a little better luck on that department. But yeah, he's still hitting the ball as well as ever. His expected slugging in June is 650. Right? Like that's as good as anybody in the entire league. So, you know, you should absolutely be buying in, even though the production is kind of plateaued for the last 2 weeks or so. You should be absolutely buying in. Everything is still there. He's just not getting the counting stats that add the fantasy juice, but they will come. Nobody hits this good for very long and continually gets bad counting stats.
Well, we moved down in the list to number 37 overall, where St. Louis Cardinals first baseman Alec Burleson has moved up 16 spots, up inside the top 50 for the first time this season, I believe. Burleson is flashing a little bit of power. Cardinals are a much better lineup than we thought they were coming into the season. A lot of good things for Alec Burleson.
Yeah, the top half of that lineup has been really, really plus. Like, we already thought that Ivan Herrera would be good, but then it was kind of like, who else? You know, JJ Weatherholt is scrappy. How good can he be? The breakout of Jordan Walker is something nobody saw coming. He fixed two problems at the same time, right? He fixed a strikeout problem and a ground ball problem. Usually we hope guys sort of fix one of them over an offseason. He fixed both, apparently. So all of a sudden, you know, then you add in Alec Burleson, who he's always been a guy who I thought could hit for average. It's the power that's always been a little bit of a question mark. He always kind of seemed like a 20 home run guy with good ratios who does miss sometimes. So he's kind of been harder for me to rank. The one thing that's really different right now with Burleson is that he's pulling fly balls way more than ever before. So last season he pulled 24.5% of his fly balls. This season so far, 45.5%, right? That's a huge increase. And the thing with batted ball direction, so guys that show it as a skill repeatedly, it can be one, right? Classic example is Isak Paredes. Right? Dude just pulls fly balls. It's all he does with fly balls. He doesn't do anything else with them. Look at his home run chart. They are all in the exact same freaking spot. It's like a blob right down the foul line. That's just what he does. That's never been what Alec Burleson does. It's what he's doing right now, though, in terms of where he's putting fly balls. And it's really hard to tell. Is this like a purposeful thing that he can keep repeating over extended periods? Guys can have sort of wonky batted ball direction for like a year. Right? It's sort of like how a guy can show reverse splits for a year and then it kind of goes away. It's because this stat doesn't stabilize necessarily within one season. right? Like you don't usually hit enough fly balls to really stabilize that. Now, on one hand, Burleson has a really good hit tool. And the reason I believed it so quick with Isak Paredes is because he was a guy who always had a great hit tool, right? But he was using it to spray the ball around. And then he decided, oh, why don't I just use this to hit the ball exactly in that spot right up there, up the foul line. Maybe Alec Burleson is doing that. And if he is, I've ranked him 20 spots short, right? If it's more of a fluke, then I've ranked him a little bit ahead of probably where he should be, right? So I kind of hedged a bit here and ranked him. I do expect his rank to go up. Basically, the more he keeps pulling fly balls, the more willing I am to lean into it, because he does have the really good hit tool from the left side. It's really hard to know with this kind of stat because it is just fluky. It's random. It's kind of like if a guy all of a sudden spikes his line drive rate, I'll tend to be like, I don't believe it until they just keep on doing it. Right. And it's good to have this conservative mindset because most of the time it fizzles and it's really hard to pick the right spots. And it's not like you're like wondering if you should pick up Burleson off the wire. It's more like, well, how good is he? Is this my first baseman for the rest of the season? I think the answer is yes. The question is he a top 5 to 7 first baseman or like a top 8 to 12 first baseman? And that's what that batted ball direction in the air is going to tell us.
We'll move back to Chicago. This time we'll be talking about the National League team in the city. That's obviously the Cubs. Outfielder Seiya Suzuki up 23 spots to 70th overall. Suzuki had that early season injury, came back, and we're finally starting to see some production out of the Cubs outfielder.
Yeah, Suzuki has always been a little bit streaky. And you know, I had been dropping him. So he and Joe Adell kind of moved up together. They're both showing signs of life. They've both been a lot better over the last week or two. And what I say in the article is really that it's easy to move them up in big chunks, like 15, 20 spots, because I know these guys. I trust this underlying ability, right? Like this, they are doing what I expect them to do. So it's easy. Basically, they fell in the ranks because they weren't doing what I expect them to do. So the moment they start doing it, I lift them back up very quickly. As opposed to a guy who's never really done something before, I'm going to be more hesitant to raise them up because I'm like, I don't know how real this is. But Suzuki and Adell, what they're doing, I'm like, oh yeah, this is what I expected the whole time. Boom, shoot back up. The moment I see more than a few days of life, right? So that's something we've been waiting for on lots of guys, right? So Bo Bichette, another guy who takes a big jump in the rankings because he had just, I mean, Bo Bichette over the last 7 games has 3 home runs and 19 combined runs in RBI, which is pretty silly, right? Like you can't, like that's an insane pace to have almost 3 times as many runs in RBI as you do games. But, and it's also really weird because his average exit velocity in those 6 games is 86.5 miles an hour. That's super pedestrian. And he only had 2 barrels. So he has like 3 home runs and all these like runs in RBIs, but he has 2 barrels during that time, which is kind of weird. But again, him going on crazy hot streaks to make up for these extended slumps, he's done that before. I'm more willing to believe that he can do that as opposed to, again, like a Zach Eloff who's really been bad, right? Yeah, he's been good, but I'm still just going to be really skeptical because the type of player he's been for the last 2 years, or, you know, something to that effect. Like we'll talk about some of the guys towards the back of the list where I'm just like, hey, you know, I'm really skeptical of this because either I've seen them flash it for like a couple weeks and then never bring it back in a season, or because they've just never really done this before. And I'm not, you know, I can't really buy in. But Adell and Suzuki are the types that I'm like, oh yeah, sure. That they're supposed to do that. Up you go.
One of the names I cherry picked for the riser section, just because I thought it was fascinating that he was included in the bottom, you know, 25 hitters of the list, Rockies rookie outfielder Cole Kerrig. What have you seen from Kerrig and what should we expect from him going forward?
So I know there's some hype on Kerrig and they're not wrong to have it, right? Like I know Eno's a guy who likes Kerrig. This dude swings the bat really, really hard. Cole Kerrig has some of the best bat speed. Again, that stat stabilizes fairly quickly. It'll go up and down by like a mile or hour per two, like throughout the season, sometimes maybe 2 or 3 for short stretches, but it's pretty much where it's going to be. And he swings the bat really, really hard, which is great because he's in Colorado. If you can swing the bat really, really hard, you can send the ball a really, really long way, right? So that's the plus. The thing about Kerrig is like he's always had this bat speed, and the power doesn't match up, right? Like the power, you know, His bat speed right now is 74.3 miles per hour. That's really, really fast. His average exit velocity in his first 24 batted balls, 83.7. He's only adding 10 miles an hour to this swing, right? Whereas you think of like a guy like O'Neill Cruz, he adds like 50 miles an hour when he barrels it up, right? Like his bat speed goes, like, you know, he swings the bat like 77, 78 miles an hour. And then the ball, boom, off the bat can be up to 120. Usually it's more like 30 to 40 miles an hour. He's adding a ton of power there, right? Carrig's not doing that. And the main reason most likely is a struggle with batted ball quality. No matter how hard you swing the bat, if you don't barrel it up, you're not going to have great outcomes, right? You could swing the bat 100 miles an hour, but if you only graze it with the top, all you've done is shot a pop-up way up into the sky, right? So that's the thing with Carrig. So even in the minor leagues, right, like his power numbers just don't line up with the type of power he's got. Now, he does have speed, that's for sure, right? He already had 30 stolen bases in AAA in 57 games, and he did, but he only had 6 home runs, right? Which isn't really that far behind compared to what he had done in like AA and high A. So I'm not sure the power match, like I'm not sure the game power is going to match the raw power, because it's not like you get better at batted ball quality the moment you hit the majors. It's a lot harder. The ball's coming at you faster. It's moving a lot more, and it's more often in difficult places in the zone, right? Because you're facing major league pitching now and you're facing a lot of guys you've never seen before, all these things. So I think there could be some struggle. However, there's a ton of upside here. And if you're going to go streaming, you might as well go stream on a Colorado Rockies hitter who is about to spend a whole week at home, right? So their next two series are both at home. The Rockies have had an amazing stretch of schedule of late. So, you know, a lot of them have some pumped up stats too. So Willie Castro makes the back of the list as well. But, you know, because he's, and Kyle Karros, who these two guys really aren't all that special, right? But they're hitting really well right now, and they're at home for a week. So, you know, with Cole Carrig, that's really what it is. There is upside here. If he can figure out this batted ball thing, there's a lot more power upside than maybe his scouting report ever suggested or anything like that. But again, he's got to get to that game power by getting better batted ball quality. And I talk about this a lot where, like, yeah, this dude has power, but if you're just missing, that means you're sending fly balls into the outfield, right? And they're staying in the yard, so they're not great. Carrig's also had a little bit of ground ball issues in the minor leagues. We'll see how well that translates to the major leagues, but again, lots of upside, but a couple warts that keep him from being ranked instantly in the top 120 or something like that.
Beautiful. Any other risers that we want to talk about, before we head to break?
Yeah, there's, you know, I'll just quickly mention, you know, a couple guys that really make some jumps are, like I was mentioning before with Suzuki and Adele, that are just like vets who have not really played well all the time, that are showing a little more life. So that's Geraldo Perdomo, Alec Bohm, and Jackson Merrill all get ranked from 110 to 112. They get a really nice bump there. Some guys, probably the guy who jumped into the list the highest, who went from unranked to, you know, 119, is Dominic Canzone. So what he is a streaky platoon guy, right? If you, at a very broad level, he does appear to be a streaky platoon guy. The thing is, I'm starting to wonder if he's like the best one, right? If he's like the best streaky platoon guy of all the streaky platoon guys, of all of like the is he the new Kerry Carpenter type, right? Who, yes, he's going to sit against the lefties, but when he's in, it's worth it. So just hold him in your lineup all week. So I'm starting to take this view on Canzone. I really kind of dove into him this last week. He was almost the feature, but I decided to go with Vargas. And, you know, I don't usually jump in a guy that high, but the results have always been there, and he dipped, but then he came back. And I mean, I've talked about this already this season. It's one thing to have a spike. It's another to have a spike, a dip, and then come back to that level. That's what Canzone is doing right now. That's what's got me excited. And that's why he can jump in the list so high at 119 above guys like Royce Lewis, who just got added back, Jason Dominguez, who just got added back, George Springer, who just got added back, all these guys. I put him in above all that because I do think there might be something special happening here. Not like a top 50 hitter kind of guy, but Kerry Carpenter got as high as into like the 80s and 90s, right? That's the that's to me so far the best comp I can make, is that kind of like platoon hitter, but so good in the platoon that you don't really care it's a platoon.
There you go. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about the guys tumbling down the list after this. Welcome back to Hacks and Jacks. I'm your host, Brett Ford, here with senior analyst Scott Chu, talking hitters on pitcher list. We talked about the guys rising up Scott's top 150 hitters list. Let's talk about the guys tumbling down this week. And we'll start right at the top, where Junior Caminero has only fallen six spots, but he's dropped a tier, Scott. What is Caminero doing that has got you a little bit concerned here?
Yeah, so like if you want to be technical, he is the biggest faller in the top 40, right? Again, it's only six spots. There's not a ton. And it's actually, it feels like a little more than six because a bunch of guys kind of got pulled out of this from all those injuries that we read earlier. So it's sort of a little more than that, but it kind of ends up being a net negative six. And, you know, with Caminero, I shouldn't say I'm worried about Caminero. I'm not. I think the question right now is, I mean, I originally had him within my top 10 hitters to start the season. I really loved what he was capable of, and I still am. He started out the season really great, but it's really been a rough month or so. I like that the walk rate's going up. I think he's hitting the ball plenty hard. It's a ground ball problem right now. And the fact that he doesn't have that quite nice of a home park. I know he actually hit more home runs on the road than he did at home last year when he was in a AAA park, but it just hasn't been quite the same. So with Caminero, I'm just kind of readjusting expectations here. I think it's more likely he moves up a little bit than he does fall down. I don't know if he could really work his way back into the top 10 unless he's had like a month and a half of just like scorching results. Cause the slumps are a little worse than I thought they would be, really stemming from these ground balls. So if he can fix that, he should move back up a bit. Though also it's going to be hard to match the 45 home runs and the counting stats from last year. I kind of felt like he could do that coming into this year, but I guess a more reasonable expectation at this point is 30 to 35, which again, still really good. Like this isn't, I know I say this a lot, but I make a guy fall in the top 40. It's not actionable at all, right? There's really nothing you should do about it, right? Like maybe you can be like, well, you know, he's still pretty good. And maybe he has like, he's performed worse than a top 40 hitter. So if you're like, hey, I think there might be a bargain there, I can go and try to acquire him via trade. Cause I still think he's better than a top 50 hitter. Even though other people might think he's worse and maybe overreacting to the fact he's not in that ballpark anymore and all these other things, I could maybe see that happening, but you know, otherwise, there's not really anything to do about it, right? It's just like, yeah, I've adjusted him and where, you know, kind of where I would rank him going forward. This isn't exactly a trade chart, but, you know, he's probably more like this tier of player. I really struggled between starting this tier with him or Brian Reynolds. But, you know, either way, it was, you know, he's still really good. There's nothing you should do here. This is still your third baseman. He's still one of the top, what is that, like four third basemen? Right? Because there's just not that many at the top with Jose Ramirez gone, right? In terms of active third baseman right now, I think my number one, honest to God, my number one is Miguel Vargas, right? Number two becomes Junior Caminero because there's just not that many of them right now. So, I mean, there's nothing you can do. You're not going to upgrade at third base off of Junior Caminero for me rest of season.
How dare you not mention our sweet baby boy, Sal Stewart, the number three third baseman on our list.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I love me some Sal Stewart, and he is hitting a little better. He drops very mildly in the list, but that's more because Wilson Contreras and Liam Hicks and Alec Burleson all got a bump. Like that's literally, he drops two spots because two of those guys went ahead of him.
Well, we'll take a look at right below Sal Stewart. Sal Stewart ranked 47th overall. The guy we're going to talk about is ranked 48th. That's Milwaukee Brewers outfielder Christian Yelich. Yelich falls 13 spots this week. And Scott, it just doesn't look great right now.
I don't think the 34-year-old Yelich is cooked, right? To use the term that so many people use, he's not cooked. However, this adjustment in the ranking is showing that we need to be readjusting our ceiling and floor, right? Even the healthy ceiling and floor, right? Because it's, you know, previously his ceiling and floor were really based on, well, how much is he going to play? Right. How much time is he going to miss? That's really going to dictate this, the ceiling and floor. Now I'm kind of worried about both. I'm worried about how much is he going to play and how well is he going to play when he's healthy? You know me, I don't like having to worry about both those things at the same time. And when I have to worry about both those things at the same time, a guy falls in the rankings. That's just the way it goes. So Yelich does drop down. I also don't love the rolling strikeout rate. It's gotten up over 30% over the last 15 days, and it's been steadily climbing. I don't love that either. I don't know if he's got something that's bothering him physically. I don't know if he's trying to make some adjustments at the plate to try to break a slump. I don't know what he's doing. Again, still just inside my top 50 at the moment. He'll definitely, it's hard to imagine a healthy Yelich falling outside the top like 75 for 100. Even if he like just continues to slump, because I just don't think it'll last that long. He's been through slumps before. He's broken out of them before, but it is worth, you know, sort of recalibrating where that is. I wouldn't be shocked if he takes another fall, maybe if this continues for another 2 weeks.
Another guy who has fallen, and it's been a roller coaster ride with this guy. He's a third baseman, down 14 spots this week to 60th overall. Started the season extremely slow, like 0 for 25, 0 for 30, kind of slow. Then started hitting the cover off the ball, and now we're starting to see the hotness go away again. That's Texas Rangers third baseman Josh Jung, down 14 spots to 60th overall this week.
Yeah, and I really only had a sentence to say about him in the article, which I think you should check out. But basically, look, Jung is, he's got a lot of contact. He's got some decent power. He's not a great decision maker, right? He's never going to be a great decision maker. That's just not his game. He's just kind of, he's a little bit aggressive at the plate. What's really struggling right now is he's making really bad decisions in the zone, which generally means not swinging at stuff that he should swing at. And I wish he would, basically. So he's well below 10th percentile in the league of late in his rolling 200 pitches for that in-zone decision value. So he's never going to be good at it. I'm not even asking him to be average at it. He can be very good at like 25th percentile, right? If he can be around like the 25th percentile, Josh Jung can be a very good hitter because he just doesn't need to be that good at this specific skill because he's so good at some other skills. But you can't be abysmally bad at in-zone decision value and have this work out, right? Unless you have just elite other skills. Like maybe a guy like Juan Soto could do this. He doesn't, but he could, right? Because you're like, look, yeah, he doesn't swing when he should, but the one time you make a mistake, he always punishes it. That's not really what Josh Jung is, right? He doesn't have that power that we kind of thought he had when he was, you know, originally brought up. Now he's more of like a contact guy, like a, you know, it should be a good batting average plus like maybe 18 to 20 home runs kind of player. And if the in zone decision value is this low, like among the worst in the league, you're not really going to be able to pull that off successfully because you've got to take chances at the balls you get that are hittable. It's just that simple, especially when you don't have a ton of power to make up for those mistakes and you don't take a ton of walks, right? You're not super patient. So you've got to make sure you're hitting these pitches that are in the zone. So again, he only needs to be in like the 25th-ish percentile for this to work. He can't be in like the first percentile, which is where he is right now. Just over his last like 200-300 pitches. So if he can fix that, he should bounce back just fine. And his third base is not like you have other options right now anyway.
We'll drop down a couple more tiers and talk about Philadelphia shortstop Trey Turner. Trey Turner down 15 spots, 79th overall hitter. Just for a Phillies fan, like it just must be so frustrating to watch him because he is on this roster not only this year, but I'm pretty sure he has 7 more years left on his contract with Philadelphia. And if he's going to hit like he's hitting right now, Philly fans are going to let him hear it real soon.
Yeah. And the stolen bases are pretty much on track. The home runs are actually somewhat on track. He's got 7 right now. He got 15 last year and I didn't expect him to hit a ton more than that. What's really off track obviously is the ratios. And I'll tell you this, it's not bad luck, right? The batted ball data is just bad, right? It's just, he's not hitting the ball well at all. So And it's not like, it's not one of these normal things where it's like, oh, he's getting a lot more, you know, he's popping out a lot more, he's hitting a lot more ground balls. None of that's happening. It's just the ball's not being hit as, you know, it's not being hit quite as hard. It's not being hit hard quite as often, right? Like his actual stats and his expected stats pretty much line up. And he, with his speed, he's supposed to be a guy who kind of outperforms his expected stats because he can turn singles to doubles. He can turn doubles to triples, those kinds of things. So he can turn outs into singles. He's supposed to have that kind of speed. He's just not really doing that right now. And, you know, I will say, and I, you know, I wish I would have caught this news a little earlier. During the game today, he did get pulled out with a right calf contusion. I doubt this is something that turns into an IL stint, but it would almost be helpful if it did, just because, like, I'm sure there's a lot of people out there going like, how do I keep rostering this guy? Especially in 10 team leagues. I think in 12 teams and deeper, you're like, well, I don't really have a choice. Shortstop is one of the most depleted positions in the game right now. Right? Like if you look at the injury list, like shortstops, the one of the longest ones, Lindor's out. Trevor Story, who was drafted high, he's out for the whole season. Connor Griffin is out. Ellie De La Cruz is out. I have O'Neill Cruz in shortstop, but he's not. But Corey Seager also just went back on the IL, right? So that's five dudes that were supposed to be top 10 to 12 ish shortstops. They're all gone, right? So what do you do? You know, and there's a couple other there might be some other shortstop eligible guys who I haven't listed that are, you know, somewhat relevant that are on the IL, but those are like the big names. So there's just not that many shortstops to replace them with. And even as you scroll through these rankings after Trey Turner, you know, Trey Turner and Willy Adames are right there. Ernie Clement is there, but we talked about him last week. He doesn't hit the ball very hard and he's probably not on your wire anyway. You know, Bo Bichette, Mookie Betts are the next ones. Other people are having difficult decisions about him. And it's not like you're going to cut. You don't want to cut Trey Turner for teammate Bryson Stott. You don't want to cut Trey Turner for Chase Meidroth, right? You don't want to cut Trey Turner for Jose Caballero. If you started the season with Michael Garcia as your shortstop, you've got an even harder decision because he's not been good, right? Like, what options do you have, right? So you kind of just got to hold on.
All of a sudden, my guy Willie Castro is not looking so bad.
He's not looking good, but he's looking okay. He's looking real okay as he's ever looked, right? Which is fine. I mean, that's why he's on the list right now, because you probably need one of the positions that he can play. I mean, just realistically. And even if he's not a long-term solution, it's a week at home, right? He's as good as anybody for a week at home. And then you can try to figure out what's going on. If you just lost Jose Ramirez, Willy Castro, if you're really desperate, maybe even Kyle Karros for a week to try to figure out what else you can do. Looking at trades, looking at all these other things, you know, who really deep diving the wire. But in the short term, this should work.
Well, we talked about struggling middle infielders. Let's talk about one more. Just throw some fuel on the fire here. Chicago Cubs second baseman Nico Hoerner is free-falling out of the list. He has made his way all the way down to, I need to keep scrolling to find him, dropped 49 spots to 138th overall, barely hanging on to a spot on the top 150. What do we do with Nico Hoerner?
It's one thing. So he was always this really high floor guy, right? He's always just, even when he's not doing great, he's been fine. Over the last 2 weeks, per the Fangraphs player rater, and probably whatever other player rater you use, Nico Hoerner is in fact the worst fantasy player. He is worse than guys who he ranks lower on the Fangraphs player rater over the last 2 weeks than Vaughn Grissom, who's only on there because he went 0 for 4. Esmer and Valdez for the Pirates went 0 for 8. He is ranked above Nico Hoerner on the last 2 weeks because Nico Hoerner has given you 50 plate appearances of volume with 128 average, one RBI, one run, no stolen base, no homers. That's worse than the blank because at least the blank isn't pulling the rest of your stuff down, right? It's just leaving you where you are. Nico Hoerner is actively pulling you down. He's pulling you down hard, right? So I tolerated this for some time and eventually just had to be like, all right, I can't anymore. And if you're in a 10-team league or maybe even a 12-team league that doesn't need a middle infield and you don't care about the steals that Nico Horner should be able to provide, there might be options, right? It might be Willy Castro streaming week, right? It might be, you know, right? Like, bleh. I hate it, but like, I ranked him 138th, right? That's behind JP Crawford, who just came back. That's behind Jose Caballero. That's behind the struggling Michael Garcia. That's behind Brooks Lee. And this guy was so, Nico Horner was so good in April. Like, I'm pretty sure he was in like the top 40. He's fallen over, he's fallen probably over 100 spots in a month and a half. It's wild, right? But something's obviously incredibly wrong. And again, if you're in a 15-team league, you don't have a choice. You just ride this out. You can't do anything. But I have to adjust this because those of you in 10 or 12-team leagues, particularly the ones with standard rosters, maybe it is time, right? And again, this is blowing up in my face. I've taken Bobichet off this list and he just started raking, right? It might blow up in my face, but at some point, right? You just have to be like, look, maybe it's not there. How long can I wait? How much more damage can I do? Especially if I'm in a roto league, how much more damage can I do, right? Before I have to think about moving on and maybe let it be someone else's problem, especially if there is another second base eligible guy out there who has some upside, right? And there are those guys, right? Or at least placeholders that can get you there until we find someone who's good, right? Like it's there again. Willy Castro, Mauricio Dubon, those are just placeholders. Even like Nick Gonzalez or something like that. They're just placeholders. But, you know, there might be someone, right? And that, you know, maybe you just stream until you find something that sticks. Maybe that'll just be Nico Horner again. It's not like anyone else is going to be dying to scoop him off the wire. It's sad. I'm bummed. This was supposed to be one of these like super solid high floor guys and just the floor absolutely fell out.
I think that feels kind of like the summation of the Cubs season so far. But what can you do? Any other fallers, any other list names that you want to mention before we sign off?
Yeah. So there's a bunch of guys actually came off the list this week. So I'll call some of them out. Ezekiel Tovar came off the list because he hasn't been good, but he is spending a week at home. So if you're in a deep league, that's fine. Xander Bogaerts finally fell off the list. I was probably too slow to do it, but he just had to come off. He wasn't hitting. Jacob Marcy just came off. If you're really desperate for speed, you can kind of like consider him one of the last tier guys. Wade Meckler, our points guy, he fell off the list. He hasn't been playing great. Obviously Ryan Walshmit. Chandler Simpson was ranked like last week and finally came off. He hasn't stolen a base since May 11th. He hasn't attempted since May 25th, right? Like Chandler Simpson's not running, right? Like at all. It's crazy. A guy that fast isn't being allowed to run. That's problematic, right? That's a manager's decision, right? Normally you'd put the green light on and they just don't. So, you know, those guys fell off. I think the big name to really be like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that happened would be Austin Riley. Austin Riley has finally come off the list. Now, again, most likely he's going to just turn it on now because players, I firmly believe they do this to me out of spite. And I'm glad I can motivate them in this way, right? I do it for you, really. I do it for you, the listener, the reader. Right? I go, let me underestimate this guy so he can just make me look like a complete idiot. I can take that hit. I can take that pain. Okay? I don't want to be right. I think I might be, but I don't want to be. I'd have much more fun if the whole thing was just like, my list is too small. I have to have 200. Everybody's good. Right? Like that would be a lot more fun for me. I get no joy in moving guys down the ranks or off the list, but at some point it's like, when people were asking me in the Reddit AMA, like, can I drop Austin Riley? It was really hard to say no. And even like, there's not a ton of great options out there, but there's not no options. Right. And it's like, you don't kick yourself because you didn't do it 3 weeks ago for Zach Eloff, right? You shouldn't have. Zach Eloff's stats were terrible until he went back home for 9 games. Right. But you know, at this point, you know, do you want Austin Riley or do you want to stream TJ Rumfield for a week? Who's not hitting the ball well at all, but he's had a bunch of really good environments to hit in and he hits third. So why not? Right. Or, you know, again, Willy Castro is a bad example, but I keep using him because he's eligible at every freaking position. You know, sure. Right. Why not? Like, did somebody rage drop somebody else? Right. Is Royce Lewis still floating around out there? Go ahead. Right. That's not because I love those guys. It's because, like, I'm not sure Austin Riley's any, you're taking the same risk with Austin Riley as you are those guys at this point. So go ahead and take one that's hitting right now. If I'm going to take a risk, I might as well take one that's hitting right now. If I feel it's the same level of risk. Yeah, sure. Austin Riley has a ton of upside and we've seen it in small spurts when he's been healthy, but he's really struggled with injury and he's really struggled with consistent performance. As I said already in this podcast, I hate that. I hate when I have to worry about both things at the same time. So go ahead and stream third base, right? Like, I probably won't do it to be like just to grab Kyle Karros because I have very little confidence in Kyle Karros, even though he is ranked like on the list. I'm like, meh. But, you know, a guy with maybe a bit more upside who, even though he's not hitting for average right now, he's showing some power, has some prospect pedigree. Obviously, he's eligible at shortstop instead of third, but like a Colt Emerson, yeah, sure. Right? I'd do that, right? Blaze Alexander, you want to hit your pony to that wagon? For a couple of weeks, why not? Right? Like, I don't think he's a guy with great upside either, but he can do something. You know, Alec Bohm has been really up and down. If he's somehow still on your wire, he's got a high floor, probably higher than Riley's at this point, right? Go ahead. I ain't going to stop you.
Well, Scott, tell the people where they can find you and your work. Obviously, the top 150s hitters list is on Pitcher List, but talk to them about everything else that you're doing.
Yeah, so besides this podcast, the article, I've got the AMA over on Reddit on Friday on r/fantasybaseball. Again, just, you know, a bunch of people talking about fantasy, asking fantasy questions, really posing sometimes some interesting ones that may be relevant to you in your league. Some of it's just broad, like, hey, what do you think about this guy? Or sometimes it's like, hey, I'm in a 10-team points league. This guy's on the wire. I've got a strikeout penalty. This guy's been bad on my bench. What should I do? Right? You're probably finding yourself in a lot of these similar situations. And, you know, if you're too bashful to just ask me about it directly, go watch these other people ask me about it, right? I answer those questions all weekend. You know, the main questioning is kind of going on Friday afternoon. It starts sometime around noon. But yeah, all weekend, I answered a question yesterday. And I'm about to do a new one. So all that's there. Again, you can find me on the social medias. You can find me on Twitter at @ifthechewfits, Blue Sky, scottchew.pitcherlist.com. I do my best to respond to any DMs anyone sends me anywhere. I give priority to RPL pros. I'm not just plugging that so you buy it. I'm just telling you, I answer all of them. You know, I've got questions coming in there every single day, every few hours, really, sometimes even more. So, you know, anywhere you want to reach me, that's great. Let's talk about fantasy baseball. Look, you're a lot of your friends now, they're probably tired of hearing about it, right? If they're not baseball people, they're tired of hearing about it. Your wife or your husband is probably tired of hearing about it. Your kids are probably tired of hearing about it, but I'm not yet. So go ahead and use me for that and ask me baseball questions. I like it. You don't have to agree with me, but if you want to talk about baseball, I'm here.
Yeah, we just had you answered a question like as you were hopping on the podcast in the Discord. So
that's my warm up, baby. It's my warm up.
You can find me at Fade That Man on social media. Find me in the Pitcher List Discord as well. Usually not as useful as Scott. Not exactly a utility in there, but I'm great for banter. So hit me up in there. Find me on pitcherlist.com. Find me on qblist.com. In addition to this podcast, I'm also recording with Jay Felicio, QBList fantasy football content. And as always, the Under Roster Players and Points League column comes out on Mondays. You can check that out as well. Thanks for tuning in. Episode 153 in the book. Scott, for Scott, I'm Brett. My dogs are going nuts, so we'll see what that is outside, and we'll catch y'all later.